Hello and welcome to Checkpoint XP on Campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports. And we talk a little bit about the pro scenes too, but this is going to be the place to be for college esports. I am your host, Norris Howard. I'm joined alongside all the wonderful people out there at UNLV, Daniel and Jacob at the desk. And here are some of the top stories going on in the world of esports. So NBC Sports has put out a report talking about esports in the collegiate scene and how it pertains to high school. It was a report that talked about the scholarships that are now being given out for esports for high school students. And they used the backdrop of a Missouri high school and the universities in Missouri and their relationships between the new sort of esports ecosystem that people are trying to create there. And according to NACE and NBC, over $16 million in esports scholarships have been given out in the 2018-2019 school year. That's more than three times the amount that was given out in the 2015 school year. So I want to loop the guys in on this one because they're in college. They're close to this story. So, guys, after reading this NBC story, they also had a video story accompaniment to it. How do you guys feel that NBC did in terms of reporting how high school is now taking a serious look at esports?
Well, first of all, I think this is a great exposure for esports in general, kind of showing how serious this is becoming, how people are seeing this as an opportunity to not just advance their, you know, the game skills, but it's a way to get into college, and a lot of people need to realize that this is now a new way to get into college.
I think it's a really good article because it covers a lot of stories inside of an overarching story, because they do talk about the money and all that, but then they also have the mini story of, like, well, the Missouri high school and how the teacher wanted to be involved and how he involved the students. Because I think what this article does a good job of doing is that it, in the adult audience, it points at more of the specific segments. Mm-hmm. Because, like, there is, like, the boomer audience of, like, oh, well, video games can't be a sport. But also, I think the growing audience of, like, parents, maybe, like, in, like, the late 30s or early 40s, they're now like, oh, well, you are, so the question is now, are you good enough? And I think that's a really cool and healthy growth, being like, oh, my kid's wasting their time, but, you know, they're just playing games and it's their hobby, whatever. And now the question of, are you good enough to make money, is becoming a more common thing. And in the article itself, and it has, like, the dad being like, well, now I have my son practice a couple hours a day to make sure he's good enough to bring in that money. And I think that's a really cool, like, growth.
And that's what we're seeing.
So do you guys think that this is something that could sort of be worrying, though? Because we talk often a lot about, you know, parents as it pertains to traditional sports and, you know, the helicopter parent phenomenon and parents, you know, maybe pushing their kids a little bit too hard. Do you think that's something that we could see in the world of esports, or do you think because it's new that it's a place where maybe there could be some healthier relationships?
I think one of the key details this article pointed out is that we're having people volunteer or work as coaches. And a coach's job is not just to make sure that their athletes are, you know, skilled or keeping up with practice, but to make sure that they're healthy, to make sure that they're mentally okay. And I think that's what people need to realize is, like, it's not just the parents pushing them. Like, coaches need to have a job to make sure that they have their athletes, their students have a balance in just in playing and in social life.
I do think that the traditional struggle of coaches and parents is going to be there eventually.
It will be.
I do think maybe, you know, even like 5 years from now, parents can be like, hey, practice your sport, right? While coaches do the more overall rounding, mm-hmm. I do think the sports dad or sports mom problem will eventually show up in the esports space.
Oh, God. Imagine, like, gamer sports dads and moms.
Yeah, and it's going to be gross. And I cannot wait to see clips.
It is. But just on a quick tip, you know, you guys are now involved in a esports show. You know, how did your folks feel, you know, about, you know, this growing phenomenon of esports when you let them know that you guys had the opportunity that you have right now?
Go ahead.
Yeah, my mom usually tones me out when I talk about video games because I've talked about them so much in my life. But when I was like, hey, I'm going to do a podcast through UNLV, she was super stoked. And she's like, oh, so where do I get to hear it and view it? Because I'm really, like, when I started streaming, too, she was like, oh, how do I, like, watch your stream? So she's interested in, like, how more mainstream it's becoming. But she still knows nothing about it. Bless her heart.
My parents asked what channel I was on.
Right.
So there's that. But they're excited for the opportunity.
Another... Yeah, another major part of this story also was the advent of the company PlayVersus. Now, PlayVersus is an apparatus that's supposed to be assisting high schools in setting up esports programs. Now, the big story here is that they've raised almost $100 million in fundraising, in capital. It's completely unheard of. And this is run by one guy, Delane Parnell. He's running that out of California. And they now have a wait list. Get this, guys. A wait list of 13,000 high schools. 1,000. All right. That is 1,500 schools less than how many people are playing football. And let's just extrapolate that. Football programs in the United States only have 1,500 more schools than what PlayVersus could potentially have in the future. So I do want to throw this right back to you guys and say, when you hear about these kind of numbers, this kind of saturation, this kind of stuff, are you excited about seeing some of that transition go into the college scene? Or do you think these guys are trying to be pros? Which one do you think these guys will end up into, these students, if you will?
So one thing I want to point out is that numbers, like this stuff, these numbers kind of grew almost overnight because PlayVersus is still relatively new. So you're telling me that 13,000 schools are now on the wait list when we've had football programs for over 100 years in our high schools? Holy moly.
I am confident that they are going to follow the track to pro, just like traditional sports. Like when people are playing football in high school, they want to get into a good college to then get into the NFL. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's going to follow that same track. But the two things that I really pulled away from PlayVersus is because it's similar to Face It, which for those who don't know what Face It is, it's like a big Counter-Strike and some other games, like Organizer. Like if you want to play with people that are on your high level, you can go through that. And I think it's really cool how they're doing that for specifically the high school field. Because even if someone doesn't go to play esports in college, if they're good enough in high school, it's still cool that they can play in a league like that.
I see this as a way for, we're going to see scouts now. We're going to see these high school leagues, and then we're going to see our college scouts saying, like, okay, who's good here? Who are we going to offer a scholarship to? And that's so amazing to me.
But also, what's particularly weird in a good way about PlayVersus is that they've gone through developers. So, like, they have, like, the right to play these games.
Yep.
So if other schools are doing that in their own tournaments, they might have to pay, like, fees to, you know, use that game and broadcast that game. But PlayVersus has all that covered. So all they're doing is just playing the game, and that's really unique and cool.
Okay.
No, it is really interesting. And another really cool thing about PlayVersus is that next month in the 2019-2020 school year will be available in all 50 states. But you are going to have to join that 13,000 school wait list. So you be prepared to not necessarily have that ready right off the bat. But lastly, we're going to talk a little bit about the Collegiate Star League. They're going through a big rebrand. Now, if you're unfamiliar with Collegiate Star League, they have over 1,800 participating universities in their league. They run tournaments around a multitude of games, whether it be StarCraft, League of Legends, and others. They're going through a massive rebrand. They're now going to be doing something called the Star League, just the Star League, which is going to be your varsity competition. And they're also going to be doing the Open League, which is more so for your casuals and people who aren't on traditional teams. There's going to be a couple divisions for that. They're going to be separated on, I guess, how much the schools have invested, you know, D1 schools, D2 schools, big conferences and the sort. But I want to ask you guys very quickly, when we look at Star League, we look at the separation between varsity and open division, is that the proper pathway moving forward for the expansion of esports on the college scene? Or do you think there needs to be kind of just the varsity only movement and then we worry about open stuff later?
I think personally for me, I'm getting very confused by all these different leagues and all these different organizations. You have NACE, you have CSL. I'm more looking forward to the day where we have one major league that we can have all these colleges under. That's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah, I can agree with that. But I do like the naming direction that they've gone with these leagues, where it's like the Collegiate Star League or just the Star League. It's much more flashy. I think it's kind of cool. And then the Open League is like the everyone else, right? Like it's more interesting than 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
And I think that I think the naming might help kind of organize it better overall.
Yeah, but listen, we want to hear from you. If you're on a college campus and you've participated in, you know, Star League Division 1, 2, or 3, or if you're at a school that currently has play versus involved at the high school level, we would love to hear from you. CheckpointXP.com is where you can go and leave your comments and maybe pitch a story to us as well. Listen, we're going to have more from Checkpoint XP on campus coming up, where we're going to talk to some folks out at UNLV about the esports scene at that school. More for Checkpoint XP on campus coming up. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for the collegiate esports scene. And right now we're going to throw it back to the UNLV studios, where Daniel's going to be talking to Tyler Tsunizumi. He's the chief esports officer for UNLV, and their esports programs out there. So Daniel, take it away.
First of all, Tyler, thank you for joining me today.
No problem.
So what is 8-Bit?
So 8-Bit is the collegiate gaming club here at UNLV. We try to act as a community for all gamers alike, and we also participate in collegiate leagues all over the U.S.
And what exactly do you do for 8-Bit?
So my role in 8-Bit is that I'm the chief esports officer. And essentially what that means is that I manage all of the esports teams. So everything from fighting games to Rocket League to League of Legends. All of our teams have their separate managers, and I oversee them. Another thing that I do for 8-Bit as well is that I also act as a player for our League of Legends team.
For the League of Legends team?
Yes.
Okay, what's your role?
I play top lane for the League of Legends team.
Okay, very cool. Now, recently it was announced that UNLV recognized you as a sports team rather than a student organization. How has things changed since that announcement?
So I think for us becoming a sports team, it's a really big step in the right direction. What that means for me is that we're actually getting recognized as, you know, a traditional sport on that same plane. Before, you know, 5 years ago, we would have never thought this would have been able to happen. We thought that, you know, gaming would never be recognized in, like, as if it were today. You know, today we see that gaming is at every college. Almost every college has a program for gaming.
Yes.
Even at the high school scene as well. So, you know, it's a really big step for us to, you know, help our players improve and give them the resources that they need to succeed.
I want to loop around that. Resources. So has this rebranding as a sports team kind of helped you in terms of, like, getting funding or fundraising?
Oh, definitely. I'd say so. Because we're a sports club, you know, we're allowed to, you know, pitch funding proposals to the school to help us out with, you know, traveling or, you know, helping us pay with tournament fees and stuff like that.
And how long did it take you guys to really convince the school to recognize you as a sports team?
I'd say I think we've been at it for the last 2 years. You know, when I became an officer, we were still a student organization. And only in the last 2 years or so, we are starting to make, and we did make, that push to become a sports club.
What would you say is what broke the dam? What finally convinced them to do it?
I think that what broke the dam was about a year and a half ago, we played against Boise State.
Ooh.
In the Mountain West competition here on our campus. And I think what helped us push for it was that their esports, I guess, advisor advocated for us.
Oh, wow.
He pushed and said that, you know, esports, this is going to be the thing of the new generation. And he full-heartedly believed in esports as a potential program in the future. And I think he shined that light for us to help us make that push and talk to UNLV to say, hey, you know, this is a legitimate program and a legitimate thing that you can invest in.
You love to see schools supporting schools, but I gotta ask, is there a college team that you feel that as a team you want to challenge, or you feel like, oh yeah, we can show you guys up? Let's leave all, like, niceties aside. Who do you feel like is your biggest rival?
Funnily enough, I do think Boise State is our biggest rival. It's probably Boise State or University of Nevada, Reno.
Of course.
But Boise State, I'd say, is probably our biggest competition. We played them a year and a half ago, and then we did take the series over them. I know that they're probably not too happy about that, but I would like to play them again since it's been a while.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us today, Tyler.
Yep. And once again, we want to thank Tyler Tsunizumi, Chief esports officer for UNLV and their student, or excuse me, not student organization. They're not officially recognized athletic club out there at UNLV. 8-Bit is the name of that group. We are going to have more coming from Checkpoint XP on campus, not just the Overwatch Varsity Series, but also a major high fashion brand getting involved in esports. That should be an interesting conversation going on. We're going to let you know more about that story coming up next on Checkpoint XP on campus. Come right back. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP, your number one resource for esports at the college level. I'm your host, Norris Howard. We're back once again. And also, you may be wondering, usually these guys are on camera looking super dapper, but he's got on this jersey. Well, this is the official Checkpoint XP esports jersey. You could go over to the website, checkpointxp.com, and get one for yourself. It's really awesome. I'm very comfortable, and it's got the sweat technology in it, so I'm not feeling sitting here getting all moist. But anyway, we'll toss it back to the studios out at UNLV, where Jacob, again, our Big Bang professor out at the Overwatch Varsity Series, is going to have all the information on that.
Yeah, we got Dapper Dan here and Fetch Jacob over here.
Hey, hi, how are you? And when we're not recording, I am living in the Checkpoint XP hat, so I highly recommend getting that too, because that is absolutely fetch.
It's a fantastic hat.
Yes. But yeah, we finally just had our first qualifier, and it was awesome. And on the list of schools, there was a list of schools that we didn't get to that we were teasing this week, and all of those schools played. And it's cool, because on our list, two of the players both got the top spot.
Okay.
So the two winners that came out of the qualifier was Northeastern and Central Florida.
All right, so tell me about Northeastern.
Okay, so Northeastern, well, it's kind of funny. All of these schools basically had the same changes from last semester to this semester. They basically all retained half-ish of their team and then got a bunch of new players. So they were all kind of wild cards, right? Because they did decent with their team last time, but now they had a new team, so maybe these new players could, like, change the game. And it turns out they did. Both Northeastern and Central Florida only dropped one game across the whole qualifiers.
Wow.
None of which in the finals, or semifinals, because they didn't play in the finals. I think Northeastern, like, dropped one match in, like, semis, and then Florida dropped one, like, in some random round of 32. Another school that was on our radar was St. Ambrose that played this weekend, and they ended up losing in the round of 16, which still, out of 100 schools, that's not bad by any means.
And what does their team look like?
Their team, they had two players coming back, but the rest was a new team. So, yeah, so all of these three teams were very similar in structure of changes.
Mm-hmm.
And so from what it looks like, it would mean that Northeastern and Central Florida just got better. They got players better fit for their team.
Do you feel like these Irish teams are going to be like the new favorites, or?
Well, since this was all of like collegiate schools, with like a sanctioned program, I think that puts Northeastern and Central Florida very high up. Also, given that they only dropped one map across all their matches.
Only one?
Yeah, only one.
Wow.
So that would lead us to think that when it comes to like the Invitational, they could be some very high favorites.
And the Invitational start when again?
So the Invitational 2 is this weekend.
Okay.
And TESPA has their uploading schedule is a little unique, so we don't know who's in Qualifier 2 yet. But so it might be, you know, Harrisburg and Utah and the schools that we talked about last week, but they might be just strictly in the Invitational. We're not really going to know until it happens, unfortunately. But a school that's also on our radar is Irvine.
Oh.
And Irvine, they're either in the Invitational or they're going to be in Qualifier 2. So if you see Irvine pop up, I'd suggest keeping an eye out for them. Or probably any of the California schools. They all have a pretty good reputation in general.
Shout out to Hillary Fan, our first guest.
Yeah. So hopefully her good work.
I have a quick question,
yeah, please.
Jacob. Out of these teams that we've illustrated both this week and last, if you had to pick to be a favorite for you to go and maybe win this whole thing, well, who would you have to pick?
I'd probably put the power ranking with Harrisburg, Utah, and then probably Northeastern and Central Florida.
Well, let's see how that pans out. Let's see if Jacob's predictions come true.
Yeah, I still think when you have a team where the full team didn't change from the last season to this season, you have a pretty good chance of just repeating, right?
Oh, yeah.
But Northeastern and Central Florida have a whole team of new players, or they have a whole half team of wild cards, essentially. Mm-hmm. So they might be better than Harrisburg now. But, I mean, if you have a core team that doesn't change, usually that implies you have a good thing going.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. It's the same thing we see with the Vancouver Titans in the Overwatch League, where they were able to come in. Their entire team was able to come over from Korea as runaway. Now they're the Titans, and we see them in the finals now. So I think that's a very important sort of metric to gauge the success of a program, the success of a team. But we want to hear from you guys. If you're following Collegiate Esports, if you're following Collegiate Overwatch, let us know. Slide on over to CheckpointXP.com, where you can find all the great information, all the great stories, stuff that you don't necessarily see on the show per week. You can find it on CheckpointXP.com. Hit that on campus tab and let us know. But coming up, we're going to be talking about some misfirings over in the Rocket League scene in the college level. So we're going to have more of that coming from Checkpoint XP on campus. Stay with us. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports. And beyond just the website, if you just want to talk to us, anybody affiliated with Checkpoint XP on campus, you can hit us up on social media. That is Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint underscore XP on Instagram, where you can see all of our beautiful faces and all the wonderful things that we do. But coming up, one of our good friends out at UNLV, Daniel, he's going to let us know about some unfortunate news coming out of the Collegiate Rocket League scene. So Daniel, what's going on with this?
So the Collegiate Rocket League were supposed to have their qualifiers this past weekend, but unfortunately things stalled. What happened was last year they parted ways with TESPA, and they had four conferences, North, South, East, West. This year, they only have two conferences, East and West, and they have roughly 298 teams for the East and 164 for the West. So what happened this past weekend? Qualifiers did not happen. Everyone's confused. What's going on? Why aren't we playing? Turns out, unfortunately, they teamed with Face It, and there were some organizational issues, and these things could not happen. So now they have postponed it to this coming weekend, and now teamed up with another esports association, the College Cardball Association, and Smash GG to better organize the tournament.
It seems kind of crazy. Oh, sorry, what was it, Norris?
No, once again, the FGC comes in to be the soul of esports, Smash GG something, bespoke to the FGC, coming in and making waves and doing what it's supposed to do and saving the soul of an esport itself. I mean, it's absolutely great to see. Jacob, sorry to cut you off, but go ahead.
You're
I had
good,
to get
homie.
That in there.
But it's just so weird for me to see Face It drop a ball like this. Like, because for Counter-Strike and games like that, I've never really heard of any big mishaps, but Rocket League is kind of at the peak of its popularity right now. So for a platform as big as Face It to drop a ball on a game so big that involves almost 300 teams, I mean, they're probably already kind of confused on what they're doing anyways, because TESPA, they're pretty good at organizing,
yes,
at the very least. And so for Face It, which I thought was good at organizing, to not really be able to do that just seems a little odd.
Well, I think the problem kind of lies in that, why did you reduce it to two conferences?
Yeah.
Like, and you have, what was that, 298 teams for the East? Mm-hmm. That is way too many to keep track of.
It works for the NBA because you only have, 20 or so teams.
Yes. But here, having it four, that means you have an easier time to organize each different section. That means you can have more people watch over different sections. So I just question the decisions that the CSL made.
Yeah, it seems like multiple divisions with like a head of division to watch that specific division would be the way to do it. And so that's, I don't know, for a swing and a miss, this is a pretty bad one to miss.
Let's see what happens this next weekend.
No, it really is, and I completely agree with you, Daniel. The fact that you had almost 300 teams in just the East, I think, is absolutely astronomical and ridiculous, and that's a massive undertaking for any organization, let alone one that is big as Face It is. But it just seems that that's an inhumane amount of teams to try to organize in one conference. By splitting it into four, it made a lot more sense. But I want to ask you guys a very quick question, is that as the collegiate scene for esports continues to grow, I mean, you're going to have conferences with over 200, 300, and 400 teams, because there's a lot of schools out there. What do you think is the solution for sort of paring some of these schools down to make this all work?
Well, let's look at the NFL. We have different conferences and we have different divisions. So maybe we should consider having like the Northeast Division or the Southwest Division, things like that. Well, and have
Even the way that college sports organize themselves now with football and basketball, I mean, I think it's a little complex because they're all named these different things, and mm-hmm. I don't take the time to learn the names. But if you take that same model, because there's so many schools, mm-hmm. you have to have just a bunch of divisions.
Yeah.
Because that way there's like a head of that division that can watch that and understand mm-hmm. and then go into like more player-specific problems because they're watching only that division. And so you're going to have to watch it a lot closer than just a East and a West. It's going to have to be like a Mountain West and a Big 12 and divisions like that.
Definitely.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It's a big problem. It's a massive undertaking, but somebody's going to have to do it. But we want to hear from all of you guys out there. Do you think that the college scene needs to have more conferences, or do you think it needs to be all brought under one umbrella? So we want to know what you guys feel about that. Coming up, a high fashion brand, a very French brand, a very special brand is getting involved with esports in the League of Legends scene. We're going to have that story coming up next on Checkpoint XP on Campus. Stick with us. All right, guys, welcome back to Checkpoint XP on Campus, the number one resource for collegiate esports. But we got a story coming out of the pro scene where Louis Vuitton is partnering with League of Legends for the World Championships this year in 2019. They are going to be making a specific bespoke custom case for the Summoner's Cup, which is the big trophy you get for winning the World Championship. And probably more importantly, they're going to be making champion skins in the game and capsules, basically loot boxes, for League of Legends in the future. So, guys, this is a multi-year deal. This is a big deal. Louis Vuitton is involved. I'm excited. I love being bougie. I can't wait to spend all my money on the LV prints. I want to see all this on my Lux skins, Jinx. I want everybody decked out. How do you guys feel about Louis Vuitton? What's next? Prada? Versace? Oh, my God. Did Versace get involved? How do you guys feel about the high fashion brands getting involved with esports and video games?
What's next is that we're going to get those jerseys that we were talking about last week in the game. And then we're really soaring. No, my main takeaway is that if NAR isn't throwing these purses, I'm going to riot. Because NAR is... Because I don't really play League... But I'm really good at NAR. That's my one trick. So he better be throwing them purses, and it will be adorable.
It better translate to teamfight tactics, that's for sure.
Oh, man, if it's in teamfight, it's over for me.
No, what I want to see is, give me more. Give me Gucci shades on Rainbow Six operators.
Oh,
give me
goodness.
A Diva mech all covered in Michael Kors. Hell, give me... this complete the trifecta and give us Supreme stickers on everything Fortnite. Everything.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Just imagine like a pickaxe just covered in Supreme stickers.
No, it's a giant Supreme sticker.
Oh, that works too. That would be great. What do you think?
But listen. If you guys can't take, you know what I'm saying, Varys and put him in a, you know, a Versace Medusa head sort of, you know, Miami style shirt with the buttons that only come up to here. Like, I would love that, guys. I mean, this is a big deal, but Louis Vuitton has done stuff like this in the past. I believe it was them that reached out to Square Enix and got Lightning from Final Fantasy XIII to be a digital model for one of their spring lines. I believe that was years ago. Yeah, for one of their spring lines. So, I mean, they're not wholly unfamiliar for something, you know, kind of outside of the box and involved with video games. But being involved with esports, here's my thing. What's the over-under on how much the skins will cost? How much will the Louis Vuitton skins cost in League of Legends?
How much the Louis Vuitton bags cost again?
Oh, the bags?
No one involved can
afford the bags. So, over-under, how much do you think the skins will cost? Because the most expensive skins are like $30, $35.
Okay, well, I'd probably wager it's going to be around there or a little under there. Because even though it is a big brand, it's not actual fashion. Like, it's just a skin for a video game
you
character.
Say that.
Yeah, I mean, I could be completely wrong, and I pray I'm not. Because I do want that NAR skin if he's throwing them purses. But, I mean, because, you know, people, like, gamers don't really play that game. If something's too expensive, they're not buying it. Like, mm-hmm. period. And I think they have to have that much awareness to know that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd probably say under either even or under 30 at the peak.
I'm going to say 50, but the reason, why is I know a guy who spent over $1,000 on skins alone. He's bought every single skin in League of Legends. So there are whales out there, and I think there's going to be people who buy these skins, and they're the people they're targeting here.
No, I absolutely agree. I think you'll see a skin, maybe not all of them, but you will see a skin, I think, that's north of $50, if not at 50. I think that's a strong possibility. I think it'll completely change all the abilities. I think NAR will throw the Louis Vuitton purses. I think all of this will be completely brought to reality in this story. Will usher in a new era of designer skins in esports. So I think this is absolutely great and also terrifying at the same time.
Well, if it's going to be like a $50 skin, it better be like a full skin.
Yeah.
Like, it better be delivered in a purse to my home with the code for it in the game.
Okay.
I think it should have all of the ability changes, all the voice line changes if they go that far. Mm-hmm. Like, it better be a skin if it's going to be that expensive.
Nah, I agree. But unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for that. We want to thank everybody for coming out and watching Checkpoint XP on campus. I want to thank all the hard work from everybody out there at UNLV. That's Daniel Agbuya and Jacob Brothers at the desk. We also want to thank everybody behind the camera, including Ethan Schneider, one of our editors. One of our producers, managing editor Kevin Kelly. We also want to thank Leslie Fitzsimmons, Ben Morrison, Jennifer Ream, our faculty support out at UNLV, and also the hardworking folks here at the Detroit studio. That's Chad Callahan, that's Joe Sloan, and Nate Bender. That's going to be all from Checkpoint XP on campus. We hope and expect to see all of you back here next week for the show. Thanks again, and we'll see you later.
Love you.
No, she doesn't.